Let's see what the stew has for us today.
Welcome to the Gnomecast, Gnome Stew's tabletop gaming advice podcast. Here we talk with the other gnomes about gaming things to avoid becoming part of the stew, so I guess we'd better be good. This episode is brought to you by our awesome Patreon backers like the magnificent Michelle Shepherdson, the charming Chuck, and the Dotu himself, Doug Roz. Today we have Taylor, Camden, and myself, Ange, and we're going to talk about games that encourage nonviolent resolution to conflicts, or even go so far as to be anti-violence. Before we dive into that main topic, though, let's ask our get-to-know-a-gnome question. Tell us about a time when you were running a game and fully expected a fight, were fully prepared for a fight, but your players solved the problem without ever resorting to violence. Cam, why don't you go first?
All right. I recently ran a noir modern police procedural, so literally everyone in the game is armed at all times. And in five sessions, one person drew their weapon once and didn't fire, talked somebody down off not a literal ledge, but de-escalated the situation. And it wasn't until the very final moments of the last scene that anyone got shot whatsoever. Everyone played it really cool and respected their power, and that was just heartening to see.
How about you, Taylor?
Yeah, so I was playing a game of Magpie Games Masks, a new generation.
I love that game.
Yeah, it's honestly, it's like my, I think it might be my favorite role-playing game. It's very like melodramatic. Teen supers are my brand of superheroes. And, you know, we all know the Teen Titans shows or like Young Justice where, you know, we have these hot-headed young supers with powers that might not be in their control. And so kind of any situation has that kind of underlying danger of, is this going to break out into a fight? In the same way that like any heated altercation in high school, you know, has that power. And so setting up, it wasn't one that I was running a game, but I wanted to choose this example because I think it really really shows this scenario happening where we are coming up to this kind of altercation, and every session has been setting us up against the sort of big bad supervillain and being put into a choice where we can fight this villain or where we can let them go and kind of reprioritize different things, you know, save different dominoes from falling down. Every GM has that, you know, that hard choice scene, and fully expecting that we were there to like fight this villain. But then kind of all of a sudden realizing that all five of the players at the table were like, we don't really even want to fight this villain. We're just here to stop all of the things that he's, you know, trying to knock down. And having that realization and saying, you know, it's okay not to get into a fight because we know what our priorities are. And I think that that was the moment that I realized, like, yeah, you could have different priorities and different narrative scenes and beats and have none of them be combat and just, like, still push that story forward.
That's awesome.
How about you, Ange?
So my very first game I ever ran, the first time I was in the seat as a GM, I was running a Mutants and Masterminds Supers game, and me being me had done this elaborate setup for this campaign where all the characters had been kidnapped from their lives and they all woke up in an underwater lab, slowly realizing they had been given superpowers. And the whole scenario was supposed to be the underwater lab they're in has been abandoned. They don't know why. They're discovering their powers as they're making their way through it. They have a fight with robot guardians. They get through the underwater lab. They get to the hangar bay where the one last remaining sub to get off the base is. And there's another group of experimented upon people trying to use that same sub, which only has room for six of them. And they get into a fight. That was my plan. That was what I expected to happen. It was supposed to be your typical superhero brawl. And they get, like, maybe a round or two into the fight when one of my players basically forced the fight to stop and offered to hire all of the other villain, all the other supers that were there. It's like, all of a sudden, my big bad brawl turned into a job opportunity. And I just sat there for a second, dumbfounded, and was like, that works. These guys aren't bad guys. They're just an earlier iteration of the experiment that look a little less human now. And all they want to do is get out of here too. So they basically they squeezed all the people who couldn't breathe underwater into the sub, and then the others kind of flew or swam alongside the sub and got everyone out of there. And suddenly my player, who I had somehow allowed to have the superpower Wealthy, had hired them all to become part of his security firm. At that point, I just rolled with it, and I don't ever expect anything when I give those players something.
That's awesome.
Now, today's topic of discussion, Taylor's recent article from September 18th, Skipping Stones, RPGs Without Conflict, brought up the subject of nonviolent games. And this covers everything from games that completely promote nonviolence to games that offer benefits to solving problems with alternatives to punching things in their face. So, Taylor, why don't you start us off and talk about what inspired you to write the article and suggest this topic for the Gnomecast?
Yeah, so this article really came out of, like, one magical moment from Gen Con 2018, where I was playing in a game run by Megan Dornbrock of the Modifier podcast, and she is a huge fan of Dragon Age, and so am I. And we were playing Dragon Age stories, you know, in a world where we are using Golden Sky stories to sort of do the mechanics of telling this tale. So we were all playing cute woodland animals in the Dragon Age world, kind of helping friends and you know, telling a story of cuteness. Golden Sky Stories is, like, overwhelmingly cute.
What did you play?
So I played a Hala, which is, like, for those unfamiliar with Dragon Age, a Hala is, like, a magical deer. They live in the forest. They're aloof and mysterious. Seeing one is a good omen. They're covered in glitter all the time. It was fantastic.
When I saw her show off the characters, I'm like, I want to play a Mabari so bad.
Oh, man. I really hope that she makes all of her, like, materials available, because it was a phenomenal, like, it was a phenomenal example of modifying Golden Sky Stories to do Dragon Age. It was just, I could talk a lot about that, but yes. So this moment, we had kind of, I don't want to call it awkward, but we had some characters who got knowledge of what we were, like, a thing that we could do to help out people that we cared about. And there were others who were not present in the scene. So we had to say, how do we set this up so that everyone knows what we have to do? And so my character and another who was playing a Fennec, Fox, we set our characters up as inside a forest next to a, like, a babbling brook, waiting for the other characters to come and join us for, like, our daily play sessions or whatever. And this Fennec and this Hala were just skipping stones. And that was it for, like, 15 minutes. We turned this into an entire scene of our two characters just sharing a moment with each other, being happy and playing. And that moment is the moment that I took out of that game as, like, the most fulfilling thing. And really, in Gen Con, like, we talk about conventions as being, you know, for good or for ill, like, these high-stress environments, there's a lot happening, emotions are running high, you know, by intent, we want them to, but it's still a lot to experience. And having a moment where we could just sit and relax and say, hey, these are two characters, and this scene isn't really about anything at all, but we are going to have fun, and we're going to have this experience together. And that was what I needed in that moment without really realizing it. Like, I needed a time, I needed a scene, I needed a story where it's just two characters are having fun. No conflict, no, like, you need to do this, no rising action, falling action, climax, denouement. It's just like, here's the scene, slice of life, two characters enjoying each other's presence.
You just needed that quiet, beautiful character moment.
Exactly, yeah. And that whole game was filled with moments that were like that, because Golden Sky Stories really sets you up to do things like that.
Mm-hmm.
But that was the moment that really crystallized it for me.
That's awesome. Cam, I know, like, you've designed One Child's Heart,
mm-hmm.
which is a game that is not about punching things in the face, unless you're talking about punching your emotions in the face. Talk a little bit about that and the idea of what that game is and taking it out of the typical, you know, put on your badass suit and go punch things in the face type of game.
Absolutely. So it's about a group of child welfare professionals that have an opportunity to enter into difficult memories of a child and from the inside help them reframe what happened.
Mm.
And one of the first questions I ever got was, but how do you attack something? And then it was one of those moments that was both, it made me laugh, but it also made me want to cry. Just because not, I mean, the solution, the game is predicated on the idea that a group of adults are coming together for no other purpose other than to help support and nurture a child. In this case, an imaginary child. And I think that there are those moments, like Taylor was talking about, that are personal and small and impactful that you carry with you forever.
Mm-hmm.
Those moments where you walk away from a convention and you go, okay, I'm going to tell you the greatest story. I was sitting next to a brook skipping stones.
Yeah.
Or you say, I was at a convention or I was at my home group and we were playing and we were helping this emotional child and I got to tell them that it wasn't their fault and they believed me.
Mm.
And I think that there's a lot of power inside of those things that we can carry with us along with the joy and the over the top, you know, heroics and violence and everything else. I think there's a real place for it to be nurtured inside the industry.
Mm-hmm.
I think there is too. There's, like, as you say, you get that player sit down the first time you ran it asking how you attack things. It's because the modern, you know, the standard game involves high heroics, involves, you know, getting out there and being the big bad hero. And in a lot of our entertainment, that means punching evil mm-hmm. in the face. But there is so much room for other methods and other mm-hmm. stories and other types of games that don't necessarily involve literally punching evil in the face. I love when you have a traditional type of game that does sometimes involve mm-hmm. punching evil in the face that also promotes not always doing that. One of my favorite games to run is Cubicle 7's Doctor Who's Adventure in Time and Space. And that specifically breaks down the action order to represent the fact that the Doctor rarely is directly violent. The Doctor is usually trying to talk his way out of things. So the action order specifically states, if you are going to try and talk, you go first. If you're doing something, you go next. If you're running away, you go next. And if you're doing violence, you go last. And that way, it specifically encourages the players to emulate that type of action scene they have in Doctor Who, where, you know, the Doctor and his companions are rarely the ones perpetrating the violence. They're trying to stop it or solve the problem in some other way. And I love that that game does that. Taylor, what are some other games that you feel kind of lead into this type of nonviolent resolution?
Yeah, so I think a lot of games that I might talk about are kind of smaller or coming out of the indie or storyteller kind of movement of games. Mm-hmm. I think until maybe the last 5 or so years, role-playing games have, for the most part, been kind of combat simulators with storytelling engines slapped on top of them. But like games that are coming out in the past, you know, 5 or 10 years or so have really kind of started to change how we look at what, I hate to say the phrase, like, what is a game, because I think that that's very loaded, but, like, things that may not have been considered a game are really changing, like, the stories and how we have a story with relationship to violence and conflict. And one of the things that I was really trying to mull over in my head preparing for this article is the relationship between games and things like fan fiction.
Mm-hmm.
And fan fiction has been doing essentially like the thing that I've been trying to talk about with this article for the past like 60 years. It's saying, hey, here is this media that often is centered around conflict and violence. And here are the stories that we are using, like the same set dressing or the same, like essentially paper dolls in terms of characters to tell stories that might resonate more with us. So stories like going on a date between Kirk and Spock or like laundry day at Hogwarts. So games that are kind of pulling that into the forefront are games that I think really do this very well. I mentioned it in the article, but a friend of mine is game designer Amy Weston, and she has a game out called Formative, which is a game about like transformation, queer families, and what to do when your body changes maybe without your permission. And that is a game that I think does this spectacularly well, because there is no, like, overarching story. There are different, you know, quote-unquote stories that you tell as you pull cards and read prompts, kind of similar to Avery Alder's The Quiet Year.
Mm.
But these are all kind of vignettes. And yes, there may be a theme that ties all of these different scenes together, but for the most part, you are telling contained little moments within each of your scenes. And most of these moments are just, how do you exist with your friends and your family and the people around you?
That's really cool. And I think it's underestimated. Like, a lot of, like, I know a lot of people who they play traditional games, and they look at a lot of these indie games and are like, why would I play that? That sounds weird. I don't know that I would enjoy that. What I don't think people understand is that not every indie game may be for you, but that's still bringing some important ideas and concepts to the industry that trickle in and start feeding other things. And I don't think, like, let's take a look at the behemoth of the industry, 5th edition D&D. 5th edition D&D takes a lot of ideas from indie games from 10 years ago and fed them into the way that game works. Sure, it's still a completely traditional game. Sure, you're still doing the typical D&D-style story, but there are concepts in there that come from these weird indie games that have been around for the last 15 years or so. And it's interesting seeing the things start to kind of, you know, blend together. There's a scene in... crap, what's the name of the movie? It's Anne Hathaway, Meryl Streep, about fashion.
Devil Wears Prada?
Yeah, The Devil Wears Prada. There's a scene in that where Anne Hathaway's character kind of, she snorts or laughs at something when they're going on about some high fashion thing. And Meryl Streep's character basically rips into her, pointing out that the color of her sweater comes from 18 months ago when they were deciding what colors were going to go into the fashions of that particular season for high fashion, and how, no, you may not wear this particular thing you see walking down the runway, but the concepts and colors and ideas that are in that thing are going to become what the mainstream ends up buying out of their stores in, you know, a certain amount of time. And these things feed into each other more than people realize.
So I love that scene, but I don't want to, like, derail too much of our conversation, but I think it's important to note that both of those characters are very wrong moment. Because while Anne Hathaway is, like, dismissing this and not really knowing the history, Meryl Streep's character is also not realizing the importance that, like, the everyday person has with fashion, and just saying, like, you know, the proles on the street get the cast-offs. Like, that's not the message that I really want to send in terms of, like, who gets to play of game.
No. It's the idea, kind of like what I took away from that scene, is that things feed into each other more than you realize.
Yeah.
Well, you've got games like Dialect, which I was lucky enough to play this year, and I absolutely adore. And it's a game about people in isolation and how their language grows and how ultimately it dies. Mm-hmm. And you think about those concepts of culture and language. And to me, the possibility of there being a direct pipeline into affecting how traditional games build their own lore for a party out of those kind of concepts, that's absolutely possible. And it would be brilliant if they listened, because I love that game. I love everything about it. But when you tell people, yeah, it's a game about language and how it dies, they're like, huh? How's that a game? How's that a thing?
Do I get to punch?
Exactly. But you sit down and you play it. And like, the first time I got a chance to play it, I played a Portuguese metal sculptor on Mars. And I remember him so intensely. And, you know, the heartbreak at watching both his art and the words that were created around it die. You know, that's as memorable as defeating any big bad, as far as I'm concerned. But
Yeah. Well, I think we've said a lot about this. Are there any last words either of you wanna bring to the conversation?
I guess I might just want to reemphasize my, like, love for fan fiction and how that, I think, drives this kind of underlying interest for me. And encourage anyone that is listening to, whatever your favorite story is, go on Archive of Our Own and just find something there and use the term slice of life and just like see what you have in your search.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I totally agree with that idea that fan fiction brings in the opportunity to have those small moments between characters that you may not have time to see mm-hmm. in the actual source material. I spent a very long time going through Archive of Our Own reading Mass Effect fan fiction after I finished the game because I still needed more.
Yeah.
Cam, any last words from you?
I would just say there are a lot of brilliant different games out there, and go try them. Mm-hmm. If you have an opportunity to at your local game store at a convention, go and try them, and you might be surprised the different types of storytelling that really touch you and you want to pursue more of.
I think we've covered things, so let's get out of here. This show is funded by the Gnome Stew Patreon. You too can become a Patreon backer by following the Patreon link on the Gnome Stew website to the Gnome Stew Patreon. This ad is brought to you by endless videos of puppies and kittens being super cute because it takes a special kind of monster to still want to punch things in the face after watching videos of puppies playing or kittens falling asleep. If you are enjoying the Gnomecast, you'll probably like many of the other Misdirected Mark shows. Here's another one to check out.
The Lounge. Doc finds the brightest, the most fun game designers and sits down to have a cool chat with them. You never know what conversation is going to come up in the lounge.
You can find all of us at GnomeStew.com, at GnomeStew on Twitter, and GnomeStew on Facebook. Taylor, Camden, where can we find you on the internet?
So you can find me living and breathing on Twitter at Leviathan Files. You can find everything else that I do on riverhousegames.com. And I don't know quite when this will be going up, but if it's before October 19th, you can find a game that I'm kickstarting, 13 Demon Princes, Hell's Favorite Dating Show, on Kickstarter.
Ooh, this one is probably going live on October 18th.
Yes, so get us that last 24 hours push, please.
Camden, where can we find you on the internet?
You can find me at Twitter at Camden, C-A-M-D-O-N, or at Camden.com.
Excellent. And you can find me on Twitter at OriKez13. So, do you guys think we avoided the stew this week?
I think that probably we should sit around and discuss that and put our feelings out on the table and maybe not worry about the knives involved in making stew.
Yeah.
Gnomecast is hosted by Misdirected Mark Productions, the media arm of Encoded Designs.
Button!